Hello and welcome to the International Journal of Gynecological Cancer Mentors podcast. As editorial fellows, we wanted to learn from the amazing leaders in our field and take inspiration from their experience. Today, we are honored to speak with Professor Luis Chiva. Luis Chiva de Agustin is the director of the Department of Gynecology and Obstetrics of the Clínica Universidad de Navarra. He is one of the largest international specialists in ovarian cancer, recognized by the American College of Surgeons. And with me today is Matt from USA, Giuseppe Caruzzo, Giuseppe Cucinella, Jessica Mauro, and Luigi De Vitis from Italy, Guido from Argentina, Sida from Turkey, Arthur from Taiwan, and I am Jorge Hegel from Caracas, Venezuela. Thank you for joining us, Professor Chiva.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's for me, to be honest, an undeserved honor to be with you. But, you know, overall, I'm older than you. I'm 61. And I think that even though it's an undeserved, you know, privilege to be here, I think that we can, you know, probably have a great conversation, sharing experience, right? Why not? So thank you. I would be more than happy answering your questions regarding, you know, all my perspective.
Dear Professor Chiva, what was the exact moment in your career when you realized that you want to be a gynecologist-oncologist? And having said that, what was your path to get to where you are today in terms of surgical skills? And what would you suggest to a young gynecologist that is starting a surgical career? Thank you.
Thank you, Giuseppe. I think it's a great question. When I finished my residency, my specialization at a large hospital in Madrid that is named La Paz Hospital, I contemplated the next step, you know, to take, right? On one hand, at that moment in 1991, I was interested in fertility. On the other hand, I not was very interested in reproduction techniques. So, but what it was true is that I had a deep passion for surgery. I want to tell you that my father was a gynecologist, is a gynecologist. He's currently 92 years old and was the source of my passion for surgery. He was indeed an excellent vaginal surgeon, right? So in 1993, I was working in a military hospital as I was not military at that time. And 3 years after my marriage and with two children, and even though I had, you know, a very nice private office and so forth, I decided to sell out everything and use this money to travel to the United States for doing an international fellowship. At that time, I have to tell you that it was very, very rare for a gynecologist to in Spain to make, you know, such a choice, right? So working in the States at that time, it was a challenge. Obtaining a visa was challenging as well. So I found myself I would say, 31 years old, being doing a fellowship, an international fellowship in Chicago at the Presbyterian St. Luke Medical Center with my mentor, Dr. Edgardo Jordan, a gynecologic oncologist who trained with Paul Morrow in California. He welcomed me, and I will always be grateful to him. He became my professor, my mentor. And suddenly being there, after doing the residency in OBGYN in Spain, a wonderful world of an incredible specialty opened up to me. Finally, I understood perfectly, you know, how to treat and to take care of women with cancer in a multidisciplinary manner. At that time, the differences between the United States and Spain were immense, and the European Society of Gynecologic Oncology was still in its early stages of development. So I was fascinated, marveling, especially at the structure of the American training program, and the story began. The surgical training for gynecologists in Spain was very limited. I thought that it was a great opportunity for learning in the States. And I think that was one of the best decisions I ever made. And after spending a couple of years in the United States, I returned to the gynecologic oncology department at the well-known Gregorio Marañón Hospital in Madrid.
Dr. Chiva, how did you realize that gynecological oncology was the right way for your career? And how do you feel to be now an inspired model for many young gynecologists?
Well, when I returned to Spain, things were not easy because, you know, the concept of gynecologic oncology as understood in the United States was very complex. So I returned when I was 35 and I found myself being very young, dealing along with advanced cases of ovarian cancer that I had to take care of. But then in something really exciting happened in 1996, when I was just 35, I was invited to join the board of the Spanish Society of Gynecologic Oncology in Spain. I was appointed as the secretary of the society. Of course, that the experience of being abroad, that was very, rare in Spain, those 2 years had, you know, an impact in that decision of the board of directors. And my passion for assisting my colleagues, for, you know, organizing numerous events, training courses for future Spanish gynecologic oncology was the motivation that I had at that time. So I held that position for 5 years, roughly at the time of the Gregorio Marañón Hospital. However, I was somehow unsatisfied and unable to progress because I was at that time almost alone with the spirit of the gynecologic oncology, and a miracle occurred after being in a meeting in Central America with a medical oncologist who was opening a new hospital in Madrid named MD Anderson Madrid. It was a branch of MD Anderson Houston. It was in the very beginning a very small structure. In its earlier stages, I was 40 years old, and I felt that I needed more training. So probably and this is important, no, to understand, you know, the partnership with, I think you have to make some decisions in some specific moments, right? I have what I think now that it was a brilliant idea. I called one of my best friends, a general surgeon named Fernando Lapuente, a colleague of me at the time of the medical school, and he was doing just very simple general surgery, but he was a great surgeon, and he was a very good friend of mine, and I proposed him to join forces and work together. And in this way, we were collaborating for 14 years in at MD Anderson. So I became a general surgeon somehow, and I was excited, you know, for this joint venture. And we performed thousands of surgeries together. And Fernando Lapuente, not only is a great friend, but also a fantastic surgeon, and showed me the beauty of applying general surgery to gynecologic oncology. And I think that was something great that I'm very proud of that.
Thank you, Dr. Chiva. In your experience in a recognized hospital in Spain, what is your perspective about the oncologic gynecologic subspecialty? Should it always be attached to the obstetrics and gynecology department, or it functions separately? And what would be your advice to start a gynecologic oncology unit in those centers with obstetrics and gynecology departments, which do not yet have one of them?
Well, thank you. Because, you know, this question makes a lot of sense because gynecologic oncology can be practiced in several ways around the world, right? One way is the cancer center like MD Anderson in Madrid. That is, you know, a centralized cancer center with just focus on cancer. But another, and what is more frequent in many parts of the world, is to develop gynecologic oncology within a department of OBGYN, where you have a section of gynecologic oncology. Then another option is to have, you know, a private practice in gynecology oncology, etc. Right. So all those modalities are valid, depending on one's preferences. But Beyond that, I mean, we are gynecologic oncologists. We are women health physicians. And in that sense, we believe that working, or I believe at least, that within a Department of Gynecology and Obstetrics provide, you know, a broader perspective and opportunities for ensuring your patients to have a more excellent care coverage. So finally, on the other hand, to embark on the adventure of founding a section of gynecologic oncologies, the first thing to consider is having sufficient personal training to address the therapeutic problems in gynecologic oncology, which many of them are really, really challenging, right? And if you start with, you know, a punch of surgical complications, mishandling oncological situation can lead you to discredit and frustration. So therefore, the first step in organizing a gynecologic oncology unit is to have the necessary training to carry it out.
Thank you very much, Professor Chiva, for your time and your answers. My question is, on what pillars do you base the success of your career?
Well, I love that you seem, you know, my career successful, but it is, I'm not. I mean, it's just, you know, I'm a poor man, and I love that question, that it's not easy to answer. But the first thing, you know, to understand is that the key of the success lies in the journey, not in the destination. So you have to be successful every day. Success is something that you get every day. And the first thing that you have to be successful, to ask yourself, is why are you doing things? And if you are doing things for the right reasons. And the right reasons always is the patients, our patients, the well-being of our patients, no oneself. We are not doing, you know, things for being, you know, very popular. We are doing things, you know, for share our knowledge and our skills with the patients. So furthermore, the motivation needs as well, you know, passion. Passion is the driving force behind what we do. But beyond that, probably the primary key to success, and this is important because it's not in any book, is a family environment where you feel loved, supported, and truly valued. If you don't have, you know, a support of your own family, it's very difficult to be successful. Well, at least that is my opinion. And it's something that is not, you know, shown and taught in the fellowship. This is my perspective. I mean, you have to be always, you know, feel the support of your home, otherwise, it's very difficult to get success.
Thank you very much, Professor Chiva. You are one of the leading experts in the field of gynecologic oncology, and so I guess we are all trying to know what's your secret. So what advice would you give to us, to young researchers entering this field? How does one become an expert opinion leader?
Well, thank you. Thank you again for the questions. I want to again to highlight that the key of the success is the quality of the journey, not just the destination. But then you have to have patience and perseverance, because are crucial. But overall, I mean, to enter in this field, you have to have the desire to improve the health and the lives of the patients. And this is the driving force that ensures your professional career is going to be successful from the very beginning, because even though you are not known, you are known for your patients. And when the patient enters your office, you have 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 10 minutes, you know, to have an impact in your patient. And you are really being a successful gynecologic oncologist forever, impacting on them. On the other hand, to become an opinion leader, you have for sure to have an academic and a scientific presence, right? Like what you are doing here, I mean, as fellows of the journal, developing sufficient critical ability to discuss literature, making an effort to be present at conference, first with posters, then with humble oral presentations, but being presenting small things, videos, whatever, in the meeting, right? Consistently presenting a scientific material with a desire of to share your research. And gradually, with this effort, as you are doing, and if you do this with quality, you become known. And your efforts eventually are recognized. This is my understanding.
Thank you, Dr. Chiva. So you've been at several different centers throughout your career, and at MD Anderson and then on to Navarra. So how do you find the motivation and courage to start something new and then to thrive in a new setting like that?
Right. You're right, because I undergone several professional changes in my life. After specializing, I started working in that military hospital I told you before. Later, I moved to the United States, then to 7 years to Gregorio Marañón Hospital, then 14 years at MD Anderson at Madrid, and finally I initiated a project from the scratch at the University of Navarra Clinic. So I had a specific stimulus to change at that very moment, and the last shift was the most challenging because I had to move out from my comfort zone. Because I chose to step out of that zone that I was earning a lot of money and very focused in cancer in this entirely new project as the head of an gynecologic obstetrics department. I'll tell you the real reason for doing that. Because I felt the strength and the obligation to give back what I have received. And I'm going to tell you a very short story on this. I have a huge family. I have 8 children with the same woman, with the same spouse, right? And I was in 2010 diagnosed of an acute myeloblastic leukemia. So first, in the first the beginning of my diagnosis, in 2000, it was in February of 2011, I was treated with an autologous transplant initially. And then I got a relapse and I needed an allogeneic transplantation, right? So that situation changed completely my life and making me realize that life is really too short. So I decided, to live with intensity and trying, to look forward, right? Especially for the sake of my patients. So now, after this incredible experience, I love to share this in my oncological experience with my patients, believing that makes me more close to them, right? So but honestly, I don't want to change again to the other hospital. I want to finish my career here. And on another idea that has helped me to persevere on my job is the inspiring colleagues that has been for me role model, right? For instance, now I'm going to talk about Pedro Ramirez, that is a great friend of mine and who always has inspired me. He has we have been together, I would say, from 2008. He's an extraordinary man with an incredible charisma that I find very appealing, right? Always Pedro always has, this desire, this inspiring desire of fighting with a constant smile on his face. I love it. There are many others, like, for instance, Andrea Dubois. I love his ability to generate questions and the attempt to answer them. You have to know that Andrea Dubois moved from the south of Germany in Wiesbaden to Essen, moving more than 40 families. So I love his leadership style. But there are many that are really significant individuals, like Paul Morrow, one of the greatest gynecologic oncology, that he passed away some time ago, a couple of years ago, a year ago. He was working in California, my mentor Edgardo Jordan, or my dear friend Giovanni Aletti from Milan, or David Cibula, who has been an incredible, you know, gynecologic oncologist, or Denis Carlet, or Ignace Bergotte, or Philippe Maurice, or Christina Fotopoulou, or now Anna Fagotti, who is going to be, as you know, the next president of the society. So each of them are incredible and unique, and I've learned from them all. And I feel proud to see them as giants who have helped me to improve, right?
Thank you for your great advices, Professor. Nowadays, there are a lot of surgical films and resources, for instance, the ESCO e-Academy fellowship programs, video articles, congresses, workshops. But back in your days, how did you overcome learning? How did you improve your surgical skills?
This is a very timely comment, because indeed, the new generation are accompanied by numerous educational resources, for instance, the Academy and many others, that allow much faster growth. Our surgery video libraries when I was a fellow was very limited, and the access to training was more limited, more restricted than now. However, despite that, the values driving to education go beyond resources. As we mentioned it, the most driving, you know, virtue or value is passion, a desire to learn, the curiosity, and above all, a balanced determination to become a good professional. Let me tell you, I am considered a good surgeon because, you know, I'm able to perform complex surgery, but truly, I don't see myself as someone gifted with surgical abilities. I'm a regular guy. I've learned, you know, everything through incredible effort, studying anatomy carefully and progressing day by day. And I love to say in the OR, if I'm being able to perform this excenteration, this reconstruction, this ovarian cancer surgery, anyone can. It's a matter, you know, of passion, is a matter, you know, of perseverance.
Thank you very much again, Professor Chiva. These answers are great for us. One more question. You are an expert in large real world data. You started the SUCOR study in cervical cancer. You are doing Seneca study in endometrial cancer. And we have news that you are on your way to do the Surova study in ovarian cancer. Can you share with us tips and tricks to start such studies?
Well, yeah, I'm always, you know, very jealous of my colleagues in medical oncology or the gynecologic oncology where delivering chemotherapy, because most of the incredible prospective randomized clinical trials are done with the support of the industry and so forth. But I never felt capable of conducting prospective randomized clinical trials in surgery due to the complexity and the lack of sufficient economic means. So you know what? What I love is to undertaking meaningful projects with limited resources. It's when you go to a wine shop and you find an incredible wine for 10 euros, right? It's something like this. It's something that I love it. So when the LAC study by Pedro emerged, in the whole community of gynecologic oncology, we questioned its applicability in Europe. And we sought to understand the causes behind the different results in laparoscopic and open surgery, right? So yeah, we were thinking of doing something like SUCOR across Europe, and I receive a tremendous response from colleagues. But let me tell you that I try, you know, to sell, you know, the SUCOR to Heiko or to ENGOT. It was a disaster. Every thought that was, you know, a very interesting trial. But you know, the people around decide, you know, to collaborate with me, And now we have published already 8 manuscripts, 8 papers in top-tier journals in the first quartile, addressing relevant questions by aligning European results with Pedro Ramirez. I'm going to tell you a secret, you know, a well-designed retrospective study, if you think a lot about the design and you do a good job, obtain the same result that a prospective one. For instance, we discover the potential harm of the uterine manipulation, the potential protective role of the cervical cone, and we do everything just with 1,000 euros. I mean, relying on many European colleagues with the honesty and an efficient collaborator. And then we start, you know, to work in Seneca, in Daydream, and now in Surova, which is my current passion. I mean, I'm going to put together around the world almost 10,000 patients that has been operating in 2018 and 2019. And with a well-designed retrospective study, we already have, 300 centers registered from 80 countries, and probably we can obtain the response to the question that has been raised by the trust trial, but in the real life, because probably I don't know what is going to be the results of the trust trial, but I would love to know what's going on in the world when you perform, you know, at the end of the day, what is the meaning of a complete resection after primary cytoreduction and the median survival of the of complete resection after neoadjuvant chemotherapy after interval debulking. So we are going to continue, you know, doing this. Right.
Thank you, Professor Chiva, for your time and your answer. One more question. And you have also started task in cervical cancer prevention in Congo. This project is called the Elikia Project. Can you share with us why you started this project and what is your vision of this task? Thank you.
Yeah. Well, in 2016, I was appointed director of University of Navarre, and I had the opportunity of meeting Dr. Celine Tendobi. She's a woman, a gynecologist, is the head of a hospital named Monkole in Mongafula, in very poor area of Kinshasa, in the Democratic Republic of Congo. So when after my appointment, as head of the University of Navarre, from the starting of my tenure, I believe that our department should be one that stands in solidarity. So I fly in February of 2016 to Kinshasa to understand how we could help. And besides an incredible high maternal mortality rate, we discovered a complete lack of health resources, and more specifically, the lack of early diagnosis for cervical cancer. Cervical cancer in Congo is the most prevalent oncologic disease in women, and at that time we learned about the results of the ASCO in 2013 by, you know, a group of preventivists in Mumbai, and they were able with paramedics to reduce the rate of cervical cancer mortality in the area of the Tata Hospital by diminishing in 40% the mortality after using just acetic acid done by paramedics, right? So they were working for 10 years and the rate of diagnosis was much higher in the people with visual inspection with acetic. So since 2017, with the exception of the pandemic, we have been taking medical students to organize large cervical cancer screening campaigns. And additionally, we have optimized the treatment of perineoplastic lesions through the thermal ablation. So we make a call every year for thousands, for hundreds of patients, or up to 2,000. We perform visual inspection with acetic, and we watch and treat, right, with thermal ablation. So because in that country, the diagnosis of cervical cancer is equivalent to a death sentence, right? The patient die all the time. So our dream is to raise an awareness among the population of Kinshasa, and especially to the health authorities, in order, you know, to extend the lives of these patients that otherwise die prematurely due to the cervical cancer. That is really sad.
Thank you, Professor Shiva. I think we have one more question, just a general question. You know, sometimes life is difficult, and it's very difficult to balance, you know, study, work, family, health issues. Also, sometimes for young researchers, there are economic issues at the beginning of our career. So we just want to ask you how we can survive, how we can manage to balance everything and like try to be successful both in our personal life and also in our career. If I don't know if you can answer that, I think it's very difficult.
It's very difficult, and it's very relevant, because I mean, you are asking about the art of achieving balance in life, and this is not easy, I think, right? But you know, the secret of that is to have a real true life project, a whole life project. And the whole life project is not just to become a gynecologic oncologist. This is part of your project, right? The I mean, you are talking about happiness, and the whole life project is called family. So balancing everything is very difficult if we don't have, you know, if we don't take care of our family, because then you don't balance anything. You are going to become the best gynecologic oncologist in the world, but you are going to be unhappy. So from there we can find, I mean, you have a support at home, then you can find motivation at work, and then you just only have to add passion, and then everything can start to balance, and the foundation is much stronger. So it's very challenging. So, but when the balance is achieved, I think that it's much easier to dream, to design studies, and to achieve the goals that we have, you know, set, right? But the most important thing, the primary focus is in the life project beyond the work. A whole life project. No, it's sad, you know, to be focused. I want to be the best surgeon and perfectly, and the president of the society and whatever. But you know, yeah, you can be very sad at the same time. There is a psychiatrist, a very good friend of mine, that emphasized for the importance of two things for be happy. First, having a poor memory to forget the negative things that have happened to us. And the second thing is to maintaining a very optimistic attitude to the future. So for answering your question, I would like to say two things that are essential every day. And we as gynecologic oncologists, probably at least, you know, after passing through my leukemia, I do every day when I'm in the shower every morning. First is to be grateful. To be grateful for everything, for what we have. When you are grateful, I mean, you start to be happier. And the second thing is to the capacity to embrace uncertainty. This is very important. I mean, how many times, you know, you have an extension of your surgery, you have a bad result, you have a patient die, whatever, right? You have a very frustrating day. But to embrace, you know, what happened is, well, this is our road. This is our path. I mean, this is where we are, right? Because, you know, if we follow, you know, to be grateful and to embrace uncertainty, we are going to be much more effective and will more positively impact our patients. This is my perspective.
I think that was the last question. So thank you very much, Dr. Chiva, for your time and for sharing with us so much experience, knowledge, and wisdom. It is very important for us as editorial fellows, and it has been a great privilege for us to have this meeting, and we hope that the world can enjoy it as much as we have done through the different platforms.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I want to congratulate you because you have been doing a great job in the journal. And beyond that, remember that you are the present or the future of the societies where you belong, I mean, the international or the ESGO. But, and there are, you know, in this very moment, many patients that will depend on you in the future. So don't forget that every time that the patient gives you her hand, you have a once in life opportunity to impact on her. Thank you.